This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 630. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by my stalwart silhouette-y, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. And for the last time, we are pre-recorded and homegrown.
The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
I remember the way our sainted mother would sit and croon us our lullaby.
She'd say, kids, there's a place that's like no other. You gotta get there before you die.
You don't get there by playing from the rule book.
You stack the aces.
You load the dice.
Mother dear, oh, we know you're down there listening. How can we follow your sweet advice to
Easy Street?
It is Wednesday, August 18th, 2021. On the show today, we have the incomparable Mr. Bob Bursey talking about the season at Texas Performing Arts in his dulcet tones. And we will have news and views of the world of theater in Atlanta, Austin, New York, and Points West. Stick with us.
Soon.
Easy Street. Easy Street. Well, you were belting so hard that you broke the Zoom on that one, but it's there. That was Easy Street. And do you recognize those voices?
That was Alan Cumming.
The incomparable.
The Kristen Chenoweth.
Both of which who are in Schmigadoon.
Schmigadoon peeps. And the Kathy Bates.
And that was the 1999 movie Disney version of Annie, which I don't think I have seen it in its entirety.
I did. I got very excited when the Alan Cumming was in it. There were things I enjoyed about it.
Who plays the what's her name role? The Anne Rankin role.
Oh, I don't remember. I don't even remember who neither. Plays
Daddy Warbucks.
Daddy Warbucks, now that you say that.
Well, we might have to look that up. But they're doing another, they're doing Annie Live. So they announced, they've been announcing casting for Annie Live. And I'm really thrilled with their choice on Rooster, played by, in the music we just saw, by Alan Cumming. But did you see who's playing Rooster? You didn't? Oh my God, I scooped you.
Tell me more.
It's not often that I scoop you. Titus Burgess.
Oh, that's good. That's great.
So he joins.
What a fun role and a fun person to play that. That's really
Yes, great. It's going to be perfect. Yeah. So he's going to be working with Taraji P. Henson, who's playing Hannigan. Yes. And then Harry Connick Jr. is in it, Daddy Warbucks. And of course, I don't remember them announcing this, but Nicole Scherzinger is playing Grace. And I believe you came up with who played Grace and Danny Warbucks in that 1999 film.
Audra McDonald.
And? Did she play? Did Audra McDonald play Daddy Warbucks?
No, Daddy Warbucks was Victor Garber.
I knew that Audra McDonald did not play Daddy Warbucks, by the way. Just wanted you to know.
But I'm really surprised at Nicole playing Grace.
Yeah, I don't know what she's done. What has she done?
She's from the Pussycat Dolls.
I don't know what the Pussycat Dolls are. What are they? Inform our audience. What are Pussycat Dolls?
A music group.
Oh, I don't know them. Nicole is using air quotes. I don't know that. Is that like one of these girl groups that is really a produced thing, sort of like the Monkees were?
Yeah, I mean, they've been around for a while. And I mean, I have seen them live because they opened for Christina Aguilera when I've seen them on tour. I mean, the women can dance, but Robin Antone based did them. Her brother's a famous hairdresser. You may recognize Robin if you see him. But it's a group, it's kind of burlesque dancing. Girl, kind of Spice Girls meets burlesque dancing, powerhouse dance.
Cool. Well, I'll have to.
How about that? I think that's the best way to.
I'll have to look them up. But I am looking forward to Annie Live, which is going to be on NBC on December 2nd at 8 p.m. I'm assuming that's Eastern, so I'm guessing it's 7 p.m. for us.
I believe you're probably correct on that one.
Yeah, I'll be there.
I'll be there too.
Yeah. I will tell you that, you know, I used to do industrial shows and we would do these parodies of musicals. And we would try to get the rights, but if they wouldn't give us the rights, the composers would do these wacky things like you change every eighth note. But we did a whole thing around Annie and for Electrolux vacuum cleaners, and it was Greasy Street.
Why did I not know this until now? I mean, I knew you did the industrials, but why did I not know about the Greasy Street?
Got the whole thing. I wish I had a recording of it, but I do not.
So do I.
So that was that. I will remind folks that they want to learn about that industry, which is fascinating. Netflix has a documentary called Bathtubs Over Broadway, which talks about the industry that I made my living in for years and years and years, which is basically Broadway musicals for industry, of which Candor and Ebb were very involved back in the day.
So cool. And what was that? What's it on? It's on Amazon?
It's on Netflix.
Oh, it's on Netflix. Thank you.
Yep. So we've also talked here on this show about the Jersey Boys film that's coming up. And did you see who they announced casting for the person? Well, we talked about Nick Jonas, who's going to be Frankie Valli. But did you see who's going to be Tommy DeVito?
Who's going to be Tommy DeVito, Lisa?
I'll give you a hint. There is a regulation boxing ring on stage.
My nose ain't broken. That's what he sings, you know, that Andy Carl.
There he is. He is slated to play Tommy DeVito. Andy Carl, by the way, and his wife, Orfe, were guests on today or this week on Broadway podcast.
Excellent. We talk about Rocky, but most recently, Andy Carl was in Groundhog Day.
He was indeed.
We all feel like we've been living.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. True, true, true. So
we now all star in Groundhog Day, Lisa.
I think you're right. I think you are right. Speaking of Groundhog Day and the things that are going on, they announced that West Side Story, which had opened right before the pandemic, to mixed reviews. It was a very different viewing of West Side Story, a whole different take on it, including one scene. They shot it live in a dressing room and the audience watched it on a screen.
Oh, that's right.
And I think it might have been the scene for that was I Feel Pretty in the dress shop, but they cut the I Feel Pretty song. So I don't know whether there was a song in there. But anyway, it's not coming back. They've decided to not bring it back, along with Mean Girls is not coming back. And I mentioned this now, we've known this for a while, but we haven't talked about it. And what was the other one that's not coming back that kind of surprised me? I'm going to come up with it because I wrote it down. Frozen.
I don't know, because I was like, all I have in my head is West Side and Mean Girls.
Frozen is also Frozen. Not coming back.
Yes. But Frozen and Mean Girls are both on the tour.
They're on the tour. Yes, correct. But one of the things that we talked about on this show a long time ago, and you actually sent me the article talking about this, West Side Story was one of the groups that got the SVOG, the Shuttered Venue Operators Grant, of $10 million, which is the top anybody could get. And then they decided not to come back. But they are doing the right thing in returning that money.
Yeah, I was like, good for them. This is like amazing.
Yeah, that's good for them. I'm proud of them for doing that.
I know it's the right thing, but the fact of the matter is the follow through and actually doing it, because you just don't see that all the time.
No, you don't. So so good for them. Good on them. Yeah, we were questioning why they were getting it anyway.
In the first place, exactly.
Because in theory, it was for monies lost, but evidently, where did I see this? I don't think I underlined this. It was not only for money lost, but it says entities that currently are operating or intending to resume full operations. So, but again, I find it interesting that, so in theory,
which is how Waitress got it. Cause remember you were like, why did Waitress get it?
They're closed. Except they're closed. They closed before the pandemic.
But they can't.
They came back.
The extended run with Sarah Bareilles, which now makes them fall into that category statement you just read, which is why they got a Shuttered Venue grant.
Which I still disagree with
but I'm just saying now it all makes sense how Waitress got that money, because they're doing that extended run.
Yep.
Now that, I mean.
Yep.
I get it. The how it happened, but I don't say I get it.
Right, because it's supposed to be make up for losses due to the pandemic, not to make up for future losses after the pandemic. I don't know. I'm hoping you know more about this than me, but did you see that Assassins was pulled from the Shaw Festival?
I did see that.
And evidently in the show, and it's the John Wilkes Booth character, is written in a racial slur that they did not do. And they got sued, I believe they got a cease and desist from the publisher saying you have to, that's part of the script and you have to use it. And so they canceled it.
I saw that.
Yeah. And evidently it sounds like they're rehearsing via Zoom and they did not use the slur. They don't say what it is. I'm guessing it's the N word. I don't know though. Do you? From the show?
I was trying to remember. That's why I was like, how have I missed that? It must be. I don't know. I don't remember, Lisa. And I.
So anyway, they substituted a different word for that word. And they said, quote, the substitution had unwittingly become established as a fact, though the rights holders had not been alerted to the change.
I think they got upset because of a substitution.
Consequently, it was only very late in the day when the rights holders learned that the lyric had been changed, the statement said. They felt that Booth's character, along with the context of the song, makes the word crucial, and asked, is there right for the piece to be performed unchanged? And so instead of changing it, they pulled the show, which I think is interesting.
I thought that was interesting, too.
I was going to say I'm mixed on the subject, but I'm not. It's like, I'm not mixed on rewriting things, depending on how it's used, but like, I'm not in favor of rewriting Tom Sawyer, for instance. And I think that this might be the same kind of deal, because it says a certain thing about the character saying the word.
I hear you.
I really don't know, but I don't know. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember this point to say, but I'm on the same page with you. If I believe it's in that same kind of context, but I'm going to have to go. I wanted to go back and look, and I just didn't get a chance, but I found that all interesting. I almost sent it to you and then I didn't.
You didn't need to. I had it.
I know. Look at that.
We talked a little bit about last week about Funny Girl and
who might possibly be cast.
Well, that's no longer in question. It is indeed Beanie Feldstein.
Yes.
I didn't realize that Funny Girl has not had a revival ever. This is the first one in 58 years.
I think I knew that.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. So it's gonna begin in the spring. They didn't specify a date, but the Equity casting call said April 2nd. Beanie Feldstein has done one show on Broadway, which was her whatever the word is when you're first. What's it called? That's not the word I was looking for. Anyway, but
debut.
Yes. Broadway debut. Thank you. She was in Hello, Dolly.
Hello, Dolly. Hello, Beanie.
Hello, Beanie. You're looking swell. Beanie, you know what I can
she's
tell.
She's kind of like hot in the It Girl right now. You know what she's... You just saw the trailer for her new project, right?
I did. What new project is that?
Ryan Murphy's crime story series that he always does, like he did his OJ one, and it's now the Monica Lewinsky scandal. She's playing Monica Lewinsky, and
she'd
Sarah
be good
Taylor
Monica Lewinsky. Yeah, no,
Linda Tripp. The trailer just came out.
Okay, Sarah Palin cannot be Sarah Palin.
Not Sarah Palin. Sarah Paulson.
Sarah Paulson. Oh my god. So I want to know what Sarah Paulson is not in. That's what my question.
How does she find the time to be in everything?
Right. So Beanie Feldstein was also in Booksmart and Lady Bird. Yes. So, and then I think the first time I ever saw her was during the pandemic. She was, she sang in one of the Equity Fights AIDS, Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS pandemic things. and I went, I like that girl. Like that.
Well, now you get more of her.
I like that girl, I says I. So let's have a Schmigadoon report.
It's Lisa's report on Schmigadoon.
So Schmigadoon had its sixth and final episode of the first Interrobang season.
How did it leave you feeling, Lisa?
Well, I will say this. It is my least favorite episode, but everything they did was necessary and right. It wasn't as fun, but they had to wrap everything up, which they did.
It's your least favorite episode because it ended.
And it ended, which broke my little heart. So throughout this whole thing, I will try not to give stuff away that's too terrible. But I mean, I think as you're watching this, you knew this was going to happen eventually. Keegan-Michael Key, who is the anti-musical person, finally sang a musical number. It was very sweet. It started a cappella. But one of the very interesting things people have been positing about, well, I'll get to this in a second. So Kristen Chenoweth has this wonderful breakdown. And as I've mentioned on this show, every time I talk about Schmigadoon, all is forgiven with Kristen Chenoweth. She just excels at this particular show. It was really great.
I'll give you a fist pump and a hey, hey on that one. I'm with you.
Yeah. And it was really great to see Adriana DeBose and everything she was doing. She's got such a sweet role playing Marion the librarian. So it was all good. It wrapped up exactly as you might think it would. So I'm not going to say anything more about that than that. And then Kristen Chenoweth has this great breakdown. That's just the breakdown is worth it completely. The mayor and his love interest. I won't say anything more about that because I think, well, anyway, they claim their love for each other in their same sex relationship. So it was good, but here's the interesting thing. So many of us that are Schmigadoony files have been quandering about
Schmigadooners.
We're Schmigadooners. We live our lives in Schmigadesk. Wondering how a second season might be. Will it be a continuation? Will they stay in Schmigadoon? Because we don't actually see them leave. Will it be like an anthology with a whole different cast and some other kind of vehicle? Will it use different musicals? So these were all 40s and 50s musicals. Well,
I have many ideas.
in kind of answer to that, at the end, one of the numbers, which was Keegan-Michael Key's number, was very Stephen Sondheim-esque. Very Stephen Sondheim-esque. And then they also, there was the final number, did a reorchestration of the opening number, which was very Godspell-esque. So we're thinking 50s and 60s next time. And I think it's going to be with the same cast, because it would be a shame to lose all those people.
Well, I mean, there's so many different things you could do, from them still being there and someone else happens upon the town. And so Schmigadoon, so they help them navigate what's going on. There could be that they actually left and they're traveling with other people. It could be other gender. I mean, I have like five or six different things that could work, but they left it set up enough or closed enough. So that's perfect.
And the only trouble is, I think, is that that it will not have a second season. That's my fear.
You never know. I mean, four years from now, you could get another Schmigadoon. What do you know?
That is true. So let's go out. We'll play a little bit of the Godspell version of the Schmigadoon theme song.
We just talked about Victor earlier. I mean, this is so funny. Yeah. Like all this synergy.
That's true. And we'll go off to break with them, and we'll see you guys after the break. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP 91.7 FM, streaming live at koop.org. We are, for the last time, pre-recorded. We are indeed pre-recorded, Nicole, but we're still going to be pre-recorded for the most part. I am going into the studio next week, so we will pre-record most everything, but I will be in the studio to be able to talk about things that are more current. For instance, last week, as soon as we stopped recording, or actually as soon as I finished editing, it came out with a story that Laura Osnos was fired from a show that she was doing somewhere, I forgot, which is a pretty big deal. And we didn't get to talk about it. It actually happened on Monday afternoon of last week. So things like that story will be able to be reported on, because I'll be able to do that live at the studio. So did you see the Laura Osnos thing?
No, what happened? How did I miss this one?
Oh, yeah, it was pretty big. I'm going to try to find out what she was fired for. And now let's consider the source. The source is page 6 in the New York Times and the New York Post. So I'm sorry, in page 6 and the New York Post. So consider the source. But she's let go from a show in the Hamptons that she was doing because she is not vaccinated for COVID-19. And her co-star, she was being, and it's really not the fact that she was non-vaccinated. She was hiding it. She wasn't telling anybody. And
you can't hide that.
Tony Yazbek, who is her co-star in this, made her come clean, forced her to tell her status on vaccines. And she was let go from the show. Now she's, it's a production of Crazy for You that was going to be done in East Hampton on August 29th. She's been replaced by, hold on, I'm going to try to remember. I'll come up with it at some point, but her replacement has already been named.
I mean, I would figure they'd have to have renamed someone by now.
True. I think it's interesting. The fact that she didn't disclose is shame on her.
Like, why are you high? Like, that jeopardizes her whole equity status. Doesn't it?
I don't know. I'm so confused about the whole equity thing because
I don't know.
It keeps changing, it seems, from day to day.
Kind of like Groundhog Day, Lisa?
Kind of like Groundhog Day. Now, of course, Laura Osnos is famously a Christian conservative, and whether that has something to do with her choices or not, we don't know. But it doesn't matter. What really is the scandal here, if there's a scandal, is that she lied through omission by not telling her status. For folks to remember who Laura Osnos is, she got her claim to fame by the reality show of trying to pick Grease stars, and she won that reality show. And to her credit, she
had a big career since then.
Yeah. One of the things I heard today that will this scandal, and I'm using air quotes, hurt her career, and some people think it will. But who knows?
Yeah, I mean, she's most recently would be known for Bandstand or Bonnie and Clyde. Would probably be the two big standouts of most recent, wouldn't you say?
I would say. And Bandstand, by the way, I watched a streaming version of it, and I'm mixed on whether I like that show or not. I'm just going to say that.
I think you said that to me last time, and you said, I think I have to sit on it, which is interesting because you're now giving the same type of I mixed on it. So
yeah.
I don't think you need to sit on it anymore. I think you know how you feel.
I think I'm definitely mixed on it.
Yeah, that's okay.
And she's been replaced by Sierra Bagas.
Ah, there you go.
And it's kind of it's a tribute to Susan
Stroman. Is that
Stroman.
A star tribute? A tribute.
It's a tribute. I will say this before we introduce our guest, because we're talking about streaming, I'm going to run into this. I watched the Lincoln Center streaming production of The Wolves over the weekend. You know what? I enjoyed it. First of all, I enjoyed it. The show, I've never seen The Wolves or read it. So it's interesting. It's a contemporary play that has this, and it sort of became clear to me, a lot of these contemporary plays have now, there's no real, the narrative arc isn't a logical beginning, middle, and end. It's like a slice of life, usually very fast-paced dialogue with pieces of their lives thrown into it, and then some major things that happen within those things of life. There's not a normal start, beginning, middle, and end. But I will say at the end, they had me. So I at the end of the show, I went, oh, that's sweet. And I was crying like this.
That's great.
Yeah. But the staging is very interesting. So I think people may or may not know this is about a high school women's girls soccer team. And it takes, I don't know how other people have staged it. I know they did it at Hyde Park Theater.
Hyde Park.
Mm-hmm. Two seasons ago. And I was just told by Simone Alexander that they also did it at, which school? I think maybe St. Ed's.
St. Ed's? I remember seeing it somewhere, but I don't remember where.
But this is the Lincoln Center. And so the on the stage, and it was at the Mitzi Newhouse, which is kind of, it's a thrust stage. And they had a soccer field. And these girls were soccering it up. There was lots of soccer happening.
Lots of soccer happening?
There were balls rolling around, kicks kicking, and lives ruined.
There you go.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I don't know how long it's going to be available on the Lincoln Center. It's actually on Broadway on Demand is the vehicle that you would see it on.
Broadway on Demand does good stuff.
Yeah. So definitely, I believe it's definitely worth catching, and it's 90 minutes, easy, very to watch.
I was like, it's one of those zippity doodahs, and it's a winner.
Zippity doodah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's listen to our first guest, shall we? Cause we love our first guest.
Yes.
So much so that he's our only guest.
I was about to say first, that's why I was slow on answering. I'm like, first guest. I thought he was our only guest.
Only guest. Mr. Bob Bursey of the Texas Performing Arts. And he waxes eloquent about his current season. Shall we listen?
Oh, please. Let's do. I enjoy chatting with Mr. Bursey.
Nicole, I went fishing the other day.
Oh, did you catch you a 5-pound bass?
I did catch a bass. How did you know that?
Robert O'Keefe told me.
But this bass actually sang.
Oh, was he like Billy, the loudmouth bass?
I don't know who that is, but this one sang, and so I gave him his own concert hall.
That Bass Concert Hall,
which is part of Texas Performing Arts. And we are so fortunate to have friend of the show, has been on the show several times, Mr. Bob Bursey here with us, who it's fair to say that two-thirds of us here on this call really love him.
Yes, I would say that.
Bob, welcome back to Offstage and On the Air.
Lisa, Nicole, thank you so much for having me. I love you guys too.
Well,
it's a love fest today.
It is. It is a love fest. We try to have love fests every day. I think in our current situation, it's necessary for us to have a lot of love.
Well needed.
Yeah, it's necessary. Well, we're here to, Patty and Nicole and I, actually, I think talked about this a little bit after we saw the announcement of the Texas Performing Arts 40th season, but we're very, very happy to have you on to talk about it further. So congratulations on this season, and tell us about it. Tell us your highlights. Tell us what you're excited about.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So Texas Performing Arts, of course, the organization at UT that operates Bass Concert Hall and other venues on campus, is turning 40. So we're taking this 21-22 season as our 40th anniversary and looking to celebrate and amplify some of the incredible artists and traditions of the past, and then also do some things that push the organization forward into its next 40 years of creativity and innovation and impact.
I love it.
That's great. Do you have, there's so many different performances over a myriad of theater and performance genres. Is there anything that stands out to you as something that you're particularly excited about in this upcoming season?
So this 40th anniversary season really focuses on our dance, theater, classical and contemporary music, opera, really the whole performing arts world. So we have some returning favorites, the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater, which was the first ensemble to perform in Bass Concert Hall when it opened 40 years ago. And they haven't been seen in Austin since 2009 was their last engagement. So getting them back this spring is a real highlight for us. There's an incredible Alvin Ailey documentary out now in movie theaters, perhaps streaming as well, that folks can go and see. Mr. Ailey was a Texan and really said that his experience growing up in the state infused his choreographies, and just representative of the highest realization of a uniquely American art form of modern dance. So to have them back in the state, back on the Bass Concert Hall stage after this long absence, I think is really going to be special.
Yeah. And you have ballet, speaking of dance, Ballet Hispanico as well, correct?
Right. Yeah. Texas Performing Arts has such a rich tradition as a presenter of dance. And we wanted to bring that up in the programming for this anniversary season. So Ballet Hispanico coming on October 30th. It's their 50th anniversary, actually. And they have a program called Noche de Oro, a celebration of 50 years. That's really a survey of some of the leading Latinx contemporary and modern dance and ballet choreographers across the company's whole repertoire. And tickets for performance are available now. So we're looking forward to hosting them. They haven't been in Austin since 2002.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That is a little odd, especially as I think Austin has a very large dance community. There's a wide and a huge variety of types of dance here. And I think that we're a pretty strong dance city.
I feel like audiences thirst for dance here too. It's like they really enjoy all the different types of dance.
I tend to agree. You're also, one of the things I'm very excited about is your relationship and your partnership with Fusebox here. And I know One of those is This Room, a Reality Winner verbatim transcription. That title intrigues me. What is that about?
Yeah, so this is a very interesting project that unfortunately we are having to reschedule to a future season because it's Broadway.
I'm sorry, you got cut off by Zoom. Say that again, please.
So that's a really incredible project that unfortunately we are having to reschedule into a future season because it's going to Broadway.
Well, that's what I thought you said. That's crazy. It's going to Broadway. Amazing.
Yeah. So they had a whole tour planned and they have had to reschedule that because they have the opportunity to present this incredible play on Broadway starting this fall. And it's a project that Fusebox had been working on for quite some time. We were able to come in and help them put a plan in place to realize it, finally present it here in Austin, and we've had to be flexible and change that plan again. So unfortunately, that isn't on the season at the moment.
Oh my, well, so of course I chose the one that isn't on the season anymore to talk about, but one of the other things that both Nicole and I were excited about and we talked about after we left Bass Concert Hall was the Wooster Group.
I was like, the
B-side with their Negro folklore from Texas State Prisons. That looks fascinating.
Yeah, the Wooster Group, legendary New York theater ensemble, really for quite some time on the vanguard of experimental theater and devised work. And they have never performed in the state of Texas. It's a company that was founded in the early 70s. So we are really excited about the opportunity to bring them to present this project that reflects on a particular part of Texas history and showcases these spirituals, this spoken word poetry that was recorded by a folklorist who was doing work in the segregated East Texas agricultural prison farms in the 1960s and 1970s. And the Wooster Group, in the incredibly creative way that they do, have made a really remarkable theater production out of that source material.
Amazing.
I can't believe they've never been to Texas. Like, that just blows my mind too. And I love that they're coming to Bass here in Austin.
Me too. And finally, you have a lot of music performances coming in. Is there any one or two performances that you want to highlight here?
Yeah, I'll mention one that I think is really representative of what we're doing in this season, which is both looking back and moving forward. And that's a project that's happening in November that you can get tickets for now with the Kronos Quartet. And Kronos has been to Texas Performing Arts probably 9 or 10 times over the organization's history. And they're just a remarkable boundary pushing contemporary music ensemble. And we wanted to give them an opportunity in this season to go even further in their works. So we commissioned a new project from them, gave them resources to create a new piece with the American composer Michael Abels with a libretto by the poet Nikki Finney. And it's called At War With Ourselves. And it's a large scale work for chorus, which we'll be sourcing here locally in Austin with Austin-based singers, plus the Kronos Quartet, plus a narrator, having its world premiere in the McCullough Theater November 19th and 20th.
I think it's amazing. And Bob, I love what you've been doing with the organization, keeping the Austin community in mind, which is something we haven't really seen in the past, and always innovating and being more than just a roadhouse and being a little bit more of a creator of the art here in Austin. So mazel tov to you and congratulations on that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And closing out, we have to talk about this. As we all know, Austin has just gone into stage 5. There's like just a handful of hospital beds left in the entire region. When we saw you on stage a month ago, everything was rosy and we thought we were going to be back to normal soon, but clearly that's not the case. What are you guys doing with regard to COVID-19 mitigation? What can folks expect?
Yeah. If the last 17 months have taught us anything, it's to be careful and stay flexible. It's certainly not how I hoped things would look at the start of our season. But what we're doing is we're taking what we know, what we've learned, and carefully creating opportunities for folks to come back together for in-person live experiences based on all of the current guidelines and guidance. So masks, for instance, are very, very strongly encouraged. Folks may not know that the researchers here at UT Austin played a big role in the development of the current COVID-19 vaccines that are available. So it's like promoting a locally made hometown product. Really strongly encourage everyone, just for the livelihoods of artists and arts workers and for our field, to take that really important step in staying safe. Another thing folks will see when they come back into our theaters is that we have made changes visible and not visible. So for instance, in Bass Concert Hall, we've been using this dark time to do a really extensive renovation of parts of the theater, make more space in the lobby so we can accommodate social distancing where possible, reduce lines and crowding. What you can't see is all the upgrades to the ventilation and air filtration systems. We're now using digital tickets and contactless payments for all of our concessions. So there's a whole host of changes that we think are going to create an environment where we can provide health and safety for artists and audiences coming together.
Okay, great. Well, as probably most of our listeners know, that you are a part of the University of Texas, which is part of the state of Texas. So mandates cannot come down, but I will join you in really encouraging people to wear masks inside, vaccinated or not. And I love the local angle of supporting those people that are creating those vaccines, and go get vaccinated to support our local economy.
I didn't know that we had a whole bunch of UT researchers. That was something cool to learn today there, Bob.
That's good. And just on a lighter note, you're a relatively new transplant here to Austin, Texas. Do you feel like an Austinite now? Are you, have you crossed that line yet to, from an expat to an Austinite?
Getting there. I feel like my entry into the community has been so attenuated because of the pandemic, having arrived in January of 2020 and then living through, as we all have, the lockdown and the slow restart of things. But one thing that's been amazing as I have gotten the opportunity to meet more artists and audience members and colleagues and folks in the community is the depth of the connections that people have to this organization, to Texas Performing Arts, whether they saw their favorite concert artist or comedian here, or had an incredible theatrical experience, or they've been a subscriber to our Broadway in Austin series for, you know, generations within their family, or they were on the Bass Concert Hall stage doing a one-act play competition. That has really helped me feel welcome and connected, is seeing what an incredible network of community exists around this organization.
Well, that's awesome. Cool. Well, you can always consider yourself, Bob Bursey, as part of the Offstage and On the Air family.
Absolutely.
We welcome you to Thanksgiving dinner, Christmas dinner, Passover Seder, all of the above.
I'll be there if you're serving bass.
Yeah, I just caught one.
You just caught one.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Lisa and Nicole, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay. Thank you, Bob Bursey. There's some really good things tonight. We've talked a lot about this season before, so we don't need to go in a lot of detail, but it's certainly good to look at. But I should say that we need to, we never asked him what website that we needed to go to.
Where would one go to?
TexasPerformingArts.org.
Correct.
So that's where you would find it. And you could, if you wanted to even be crazier, you could go /events, TexasPerformingArts.org/events. Thank you, Bob Bursey.
Thank you, Bob.
So I want to play this little piece of, it's a video, but I'm going to play you the audio that was aired right before the production of The Wolves. All right. This piece is interesting piece. It kind of speaks for itself. So let's just play it and then we will talk about it afterwards. Here it is.
What does it take to make great theater? It takes 10,000 cups of coffee, 92 hours of phone calls with the director, 37 wigs, 454 lighting cues programmed, one set model with 43 moving parts, 42 mics balanced, 184 step ball changes left, right, left, right. 322 yards of trim and 104 zippers. 99 pairs of jazz hands. 3 years of script revisions. 10 years in the making, countless dreams realized, one amazing production. That is what it takes. Craft, artistry, a whole team's brilliant vision brought to life. And that vision is under copyright and belongs to those artists. So don't copy, record, or recreate it in any way. Thank you for protecting the rights of artists and supporting live theater in your community. A message from some of your favorite theaters around the country.
Recorded that. Even though they said not to.
I laughed so hard. I'm like, I love that. Lisa recorded that, but.
Well, I think they'd be okay with me recording that specifically. That was done by the Lort League of Resident Theaters.
The PC are all playing it. That's great.
Correct. I actually think it's a really good thing because, you know, we expect to see a lot of free stuff on the internet, but, and there's a lot of stuff out there that people make their livings creating. You know, I'm sure there are certain times you can't avoid, but to look at a bootleg something or other. But I think that we shouldn't do that. And at the very least, we should not do it always and pay these artists for their work. I just think that's important.
It's really cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a little... And of course, as soon as I heard the jazz hands part, I said, I'm going to play this.
94 jazz hands.
There is a 25th anniversary tour of Rent, and they announced the cast.
I feel like they were just on their 20th and their 10th, but hello. I mean, I love me some Rent. But
25th anniversary. Cody Jenkins is playing Mark Cohen, because... Coleman Cummings.
When did Mark Coleman join? When did that character pop in?
Coleman Cummings is playing Roger Davis. Iyana Smash is playing Mimi. Shafi Kicks is Tom Collins. And Javin King is Angel. Lindy Moe and Rayla Gershak are playing Maureen and Joanne, respectively. And then the whole cast is... can be found at the link at offstageonair.com. But I know that Rent is a very special piece for you, right?
It is. It really, really is.
Do you have a favorite scene or a favorite number? It's sung through, so those are equivalent.
Yeah, I can sit here and go, I love that. Oh, but wait, this part. Oh, but this part. There's just, I mean, I guess... probably Tom Collins. I don't know. Martin.
I was about to say, it's hard not to like anything that Jesse Martin sings.
I have tears in my eyes. I mean, I can feel it in my bones the way it was watching him on stage 25 years ago.
Yep.
It was probably one of the most amazing. I mean, I'm like totally am feeling it like as if it was 25 years ago. Yeah, that man was... That moment he gave.
Yeah, amazing. Well, more moments. I mean, the song that he sings at Angel's funeral, spoiler alert, was amazing.
And Seasons of Love is just powerful sung live, no matter how you slice it, dice it, look at it, who's singing it, how many people, how many little... people, how many large group of people. It's just, it's another one of those feely good, goosebumpy.
Yeah.
Choke you up, take it all in.
Let's leave with Jesse Martin singing I'll Cover You, which is such a beautiful song. Know that off stage and on the air is covering you, our lovely listeners.
Live in my house, I'll be your shelter. Just pay me back with 1,000 kisses. Be my lover, and I'll cover you.